Clark.
My debut, 1990 September, Bristol City away, to get that opportunity, what thousands of Geordies only dream of.
Lee Clark, 1-0.
Williams.
My first goal for Sunderland away at Leicester, it was a left foot volley. I didn't realise my left foot was for kicking the ball with as well, I thought it was just for standing up.
Hignett.
Playing against Chelsea and to score the first goal there is something that still lives with me now, and it's what most people have talked to me about.
Hignett with the ball. Ron Iggy. You beauty! You Scouser Teesside beauty!
Worshipped every weekend. It's the three legends. Banter and rivalry across the North East on the Toon. The Cat. The Red.
Gentlemen, it is 6 o'clock on a Friday. If you happen to be listening at any other time, this is the repeat. It is the three legends. Craig, Lee, Daz, how are you?
I'm very well, Dave.
All right, Dave.
Not bad.
Not too bad.
Good, good.
How are you, lad?
Better than last week.
All right. It's amazing what a 0-0 draw can do for you, isn't it, Daz?
Unbelievable, mate. Honestly, it's picked me right up.
Speaking as somebody of a defensive persuasion, I'm sure he's happy with the clean sheet.
Well, mate, I've done my job.
That sounds about right, doesn't it, for Sunderland at the minute?
You're not wrong, mate. Not wrong.
Well, we're
both in the
same boat.
Welcome, though, I'll give you that.
Yeah,
definitely.
Stop the rot, mate, haven't you?
Exactly, mate, yeah.
I mean, we plugged the gap. We had two keepers in, like.
Well, you needed them.
Oh, we needed them. Yeah, definitely, mate. Definitely. I mean, it's been a rough few weeks, to be fair, mate. You know, in all honesty, it's been difficult. But you know, I know it sounds crazy, and I can hear myself saying it. But you know, a point is a point. You know, it's a point on the board. It stops. You know, we haven't conceded a goal. Yeah, fair enough. We haven't scored a goal. But you know, realistically, I mean, Pat probably earned his money as well, you know, late on as well, making a blinding save towards the end of the game, because you know it could have gone the opposite way.
I think Daz,
yeah,
when you're in it,
Daz, wasn't he?
I think when you're in a run like that, mate, I think it's building blocks, isn't it? Like you say, it's not the most exciting result home to QPR, but when you've just lost six on the bounce, you know, keeping a clean sheet, you know, getting a point. I seen the reports that the actual performance wasn't one of the best, but at least there's a little building block there now, hopefully, to kick on again. You know, sometimes it's difficult to go that on that kind of run, six losses on the bounce and come back with a victory. It's about just regaining a bit of confidence, and I'm sure the group have got a bit of confidence keeping that clean sheet, you know.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Because you know, it could have been worse. You know, it could have been worse, like I say. You know, but you know, Pat's made a fantastic save towards the end of the game, and it, you know, like we said, you know, when you hear yourself back saying, you know, a point at home against QPR, you know, we'll take that. You know, you think, Jesus, you know, going back a few months ago, we'd have been thinking, you know, definitely 3 points here, like, but. Yeah, you know, it's building, you know, clean sheet, a point on the board. And I know, obviously, a lot of Sunderland fans will be thinking, well, you know, it's a point against QPR, who have been struggling. You know. But QPR have picked up over the coming weeks. You know, they've had some great results. And, you know, and we've had some very dismal results. So, you know, you take a point all day long.
Daz, how was the crowd? Because I watched the highlights and they sounded a little bit restless.
They are restless, mate, and you know, and it's, you know, I think the manager's trying to shoulder a lot of it. You know, a player's got to take responsibility at the end of the day as well. You know, we've all been in these positions, and you know, you've got to take a bit of responsibility yourself. But yeah, they are becoming restless, mate. I think they're itching for a full time manager. You know, somebody who's in there doing the job. They're itching for, obviously, a change in it as well. You know, they want a manager. You know, they don't want a head coach. They want a manager, you know, and that's what they're asking for. They're asking for it to be changed. You know, they're not happy with this situation of having a head coach, and then obviously, you know, a guy upstairs who's, you know, probably doing a lot of the work and picking a lot of the players coming in. You know, they want a manager who manages his teams and brings his players.
It goes back to what we were saying last week, doesn't it? Sometimes when you're in a situation like this, I understand. You want a bit of breathing space and you want a bit of time to make a decision. But the longer it goes, it can do more harm than good, can't it? Mm-hmm. And it, in Sunderland's case, it looks like it's got to that point now where fans want a new manager. Everyone's talking about it. It's not doing the players any favours either. They need someone who they can follow, who they know is going to be in charge. So do you think that'll have any bearing on what happens next? Do you think they'll get one in before the end of the season, or do you think they'll plod on?
I mean, personally, mate, I think they'll plod on. But, I mean, me personally, myself, I'd want somebody in. You know, I think, you know, we touched on this last week, you know, get somebody in, let him start building now, let him start, you know, doing his groundwork now. You know, not going into the summer where we, you know, we're saying who's going to be manager next season, and leaving it late to get his players on board type of thing.
They've got to make a decision, Daz. Whether that's to go with Dodgy, you know, I know Christian spoke and Dodgy's spoke in the last few weeks. That ultimately he'd love to be a head coach sometime on a full time basis. Now, I know Christian would love that scenario, knowing them as well as I do and how closely they work together. And they've got to make a decision, and whether that's Dodgy, I'm not saying that's the right decision, by the way, but whether they have to, as Higgy's touched on it, when you're in a dressing room and you've got an interim manager, it becomes quite, it's a bit difficult. I've only ever had it really once in my career when I was down at Fulham. They offered, when Paul Bracewell left, they got Carl Heinz Riedler, was our senior player, and Carl went, they offered him the interim job, and he says, well, I'll take it in a little bit of a way, but I want to bring someone experienced. And he brought Roy Evans in, and Roy was obviously a very, very experienced manager. I managed Liverpool one, and he handled it brilliant, you know. But I can imagine you'll get some tech, especially with that, how young that dressing room is. They'll be looking and thinking, Dodgy. Yeah. They'll probably be, and not being in a disrespectful way, probably be like still treating him as like, he's one of the coaches, and you know, we've all been there. You have a different relationship, don't you, with your assistant manager or your first team coach to what you have with a gaffer. You can't always have the same relationship, and he's aware of that, and he can't have the same relationship as them. So I think that's what's causing a problem, and rightly so. The fans are starting to say, come on, you know, we need something done, because it's like what's happening, and obviously at my other old club, Birmingham. And we wish Tony all the best. They've given till the pre-season now, which I think the right thing to do for Tony's health. That's first and foremost. But what they've done now, they're on to Gary Rowett, aren't they? Fourth proper manager of the season. And rightly so, they're getting their new owners and Gary Cook, the chief CEO, they're getting pelters because they've made their club a little bit of a laughing stock. Now, you don't want Sunderland going... Yeah. Turn into that type of scenario, because it'll affect the players more. They're so young. If the criticism continues, like you said, it was a little bit of a not great atmosphere Saturday against QPR. Yeah. They need to just make a definite decision. Even if they come out and say, right, this is one man, but he's not going to take over until June the 1st officially. Mm. He'll come and watch games and he'll assess the team. Mike Dodds will take the team till the end of the season. At least you've got something going then. All right, June the 1st or whatever, he's coming in, Bosch. Yeah. He knows what he's working with. He goes to the guys up top if they keep the same remit. This is the positions I want to strengthen. They come back with the names that they've got on their list, and then bang.
Yeah,
so, Clarkie,
I mean, look at that Saturday.
Clarkie, do you think it'd be different though for Sunderland if they were in Birmingham's position? Because they're only out the bottom three on goal difference. Do you think Sunderland, if they were in that position, they'd appoint the manager straight away?
I think they would, mate. I think the position of Birmingham, they've panicked.
They've had to appoint someone else, haven't they? If they don't think Vino's doing it. And, by the way, where does that leave Vino?
Well, what's happened is Mark's gone just till the summer as well. Tony and Mark, as long as Tony's health's all right, they're coming back for pre-season training. But what's happened is, Higgy, because obviously I still keep an eye on all my old clubs, Mark's been talking after most of the games where they haven't been getting the results and saying, we need Tony back. We need Tony back. He's our leader. Aye. And he hasn't been frightened to admit that. And he's basically been saying, I need Tony back as well. I'm an assistant. Yeah. I'm not a manager. Yeah. I need me gaffer here. He's our leader. He's someone we look to when we need help. Mark, I think he put himself, I'm the influencer. I'm not the decision maker. I might influence Tony on a couple of things. And I think the board have looked at that and thought, because I think Sheffield Wednesday might have a game in hand on both Huddersfield and Burnley.
No, they haven't.
If they're all they've got the same games.
Yeah.
So, but I mean,
Sheffield are only a point behind.
Yeah,
so
that's
you've
what
got
I'm
Sheffield
so.
Wednesday on 38 and Huddersfield are on 39, Birmingham are on 39, and then QPR are on 40. But it's really tight, isn't it? I mean, it's really tight down there.
I think, like you said,
Birmingham have had to do something because they're panicking.
Yeah.
Obviously, with the new owners that they've got and the money that they want to spend, they're not going to be able to spend it in League One, are they?
But what I don't understand about this, fellas, is why has Vino been stood down, not just, you know, acting as interim head coach, manager, but he's actually not going to take part at all under Rarrett.
To be honest with you, Dave, I think Vino's probably, the way I've read it and the way it's coming out, I think Vino's probably advised that. I think he's thinking, I'm with Tony, I want to be with Tony. Gary's got his own ideas. He's brought the player I signed for the club, who was the club captain under me and Gary, Paul Robinson, who he'd had at Millwall. So Paul's coming in as coach. Right. And a lad called Dave Carolan, who's like a performance director who looks after the sports science, the medical department, the overall structure of the club. So I think Vino's probably been stepped down. I think it's been Vino saying it's probably better if I just take a backward step, let Gary and his staff come in, take over, and then I'll come back with Tony if and when Tony feels right medically, you know.
I've never heard this type of situation before in football. No. So what happens now if Gary Rabbit does unbelievable?
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say that, yeah.
If Gary, you know, what they got, 8 games left, if Gary goes and wins 8 out of 8 or 6 out of 8, they've got an issue, haven't they?
Yeah. Aye. Big issue.
Yeah, definitely.
And what it'll be a tough one because I know a lot of people involved at the club there and a lot of fans, and they loved Tony. When Tony come in, he changed things and there was an upward curve. But when obviously announced that he had to step down, the club, like, it was just like a balloon bursting and everyone became deflated and the results followed. You know, they weren't getting the results and it's just been a downward spiral since. But like you, so there'll be a torn between the fans and the people up top making the decision, because they know Tony's a very good manager stroke coach, head coach as his title was at Sunderland, but he's also a great guy and he's won over the fans, well, he didn't have to win over the fans, they knew he was a good manager, but they know even more that he is. But then if Gary, like you say, Gary comes in and goes bang, it becomes a little bit, you know, a bit of a decision. And I wouldn't put it past them, if that happens, that they go with Gary. I wouldn't put the people in charge at Birmingham, I wouldn't put it past them to make that decision after what they've done with John Eustace, with Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, well, I'd be exactly the same. I'd think the same, Clarkey. I think if he does do really well, but he'd have to do unbelievably well, by the way. But they've always got that, you know, Tony's not well and we don't want to put him under any stress and we think it's best for the club. They've always got that line, haven't they, if he does come on and do really well. But I was
looking at the lads against QPR and I've looked at them previously, you know, it's kind of individuals, you know, when they're playing on the pitch and this, that and the other. And for me, you know, a lot of fans are going on about, oh, you know, that the young lads are look fatigued, this and that. I think they are, but I think it's mentally fatigued.
Because they
just don't know what's going on. Do you know what I mean? They don't know what's going on. From a day-to-day basis, they don't know what's going on. And I think it's mentally draining them. You know, and I think that's having an effect on the performances.
Well, this is a thing, mate,
and I think it's having a... No, it's having an effect on the performances because they look slow, they look sluggish on the pitch. You know, against QPR, it looked like they were just jogging around, you know, and there was no determination to go and win balls, there was no determination to go and press. You know, there was a couple of runs
from the lad Armstrong for QPR on that right-hand side.
A
couple of them, they looked offside, one or two of them, but there was one where he went through about four of them and they're all making last-ditch effort, couldn't get anywhere near him.
No,
and Buffer, like a bad decision at the end of it, they'd have been in real trouble with it.
And Daz, that's a huge part that you're seeing there. The people say, oh, the youngins, they should be full of energy, should be able to play 3 games in a week, but they will be able to physically. But like you say, mentally affected, that probably you lose your physicality probably quicker than when you're fatigued just through your fitness. because it just drains everything out of you. You become dull in your mind. You're not bright. You're not seeing things as quickly as you used to, whether it's a pass or whether it's going to press someone quickly before they receive the ball, or you're not seeing that pass. You're not checking your shoulders to see the pass. Can you play it first time or whatever? You end up taking 3, 4, 5 touches by the time that happens. They come and take the ball off you. And that's a huge part, especially for... This has been the first time for a lot of these boys that they've come from basically schoolboy football to men's football.
Yeah.
And that's a big big ask on its own. Big ask on its own. But then if you're coming up and that mental tool start to take place in your mind, probably didn't at the start, but nowadays with the results, it can be huge.
Yeah.
It can be huge for them.
Well, you've said it before, Clarky. These young lads, they want someone to say to them, look, do this, do that. They need someone to look to. Now, when you're asking them to be leaders and they're not that way inclined, it's a real weight to put on someone.
Yeah.
So I get all the mental fatigue. I get all that. I think it's really tough, especially for the young lads, to suddenly ask someone to be a leader and be the one that everyone follows, and you're not really that way, and you would rather look at someone else because you're not really sure. It's tough, really tough, and because they've got no experienced players to take that mantle on, you're asking young kids who you've just said there, you know, it's probably their first experience of men's football. They haven't got the full picture in their head, so they don't really know how to do it or how to do it properly.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They don't know where they're going.
There's so many problems that comes with it.
They don't know the direction of the club.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a lot going on.
Well, there's so many different things that can go on.
If you add in the fact, lads, that Dodsey hasn't been a head coach properly full time. So this is his... And I know he had a couple of games the first time he'd done it and it didn't go so well, but that was only two. But now he's having to deal with, people are starting to... give us a bit of stick. I'm 7 without a win, or he's been part of it. I'm not sure whether he was in charge for all 7, but we've lost 6 and drew 1, and people are starting to criticise and are starting to look at it. So he's inexperienced in terms of dealing with that as well. If you put that into the mix, you know, how's he going to react? Because, you know, he's been a coach in academy level under 21 where, they'll tell you winning matters, but it's not the most important thing. It's the development, and they know they're not going to be getting scrutinised if they lose 4 or 5 on or 6 on the bounce with the under 21s, because they'll go fall back on, we're trying to develop the players. But when you get the first team level, it becomes, you know, it's win at all costs material in it. So so if you add into the mix, you've got an experienced group of players with an inexperienced coaching. That's a very young coaching staff they've got there, isn't it? You've got Dodsey, you've got Proc. Who else is on there? You've got young Michael Proctor. Who else is in it? Is there another young coach there? Oh, they brought the young lad in from Charlton, haven't they?
The young lad from Charlton.
They brought him in as well. I think he's early 30s or whatever. And by the way, I'm not saying, you know, experience wins over, you know, newcomers. No, I'm not. But what you've got is you've got a completely full dressing room from your interim head coach to your youngest player of inexperience at their job title.
Even
if they went and got a mentor, if Dodgy went and got a senior ex-Sunderland player, you know, Kevin Ball, Niall Quinn or whatever, just come and give us a bit of advice, sit upstairs and come and give us a bit of advice at half time and at the end of the game, and then pop in during the week. Something like that might help, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. You can see a million miles off that they're missing the experience bit. And I've heard fans this week say it, Daz. You know, everyone's talking about it, the lack of experience that Sunderland have got. Again, well, you know, will that fall on deaf ears? Is it, well, look, this is the way we're doing it and this is how it's going to be, so tough luck.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's, you know, this, obviously we're talking about, you know, the drain, the mentally drained, you know, because obviously there's no direction, this and the other. This week, in National Week, it's probably come at such a great time, just to try and rebuild, get a few lads back. You know, I know there's a couple of lads not too far away, because obviously I think the injury list was 10 last week. We had 10 and 2 suspensions. So this week's come at such a good time, and you know, just to get, you know, it's a good result to get, obviously with a point, even though you know it isn't when we realistically think about it. But it's such a good time, and you know, to have this international break, because I think it'll give some of the lads a chance to go away on international duty in a different environment, and also it'll give chance to get, you know, get lads back fit and potentially obviously ready for the next game.
And it gives a chance as well, Daz. Iggy, you'll know this. Sometimes just to give the group that are left go disappear for 3-4 days. Yeah. Stop feeling the pressure when you come into the training ground. You know, you're constantly thinking of the next game. Go and find a new environment. Go and get a little bit of sun. Just go and relax for 3 or 4 days. Come back nice and refreshed, and then we go again ready for the next game, you know, or the next couple of games, because it's a double header coming up over Easter weekend.
Aye. Yeah,
Yeah, and the internationals obviously of Rob Burrow, of Riley McGree, but we can come on to that one, guys. We're going to take a short break on the Three Legends. You can be part of the show if you want. You can give the lads a call. You can WhatsApp your messages in to the studio. The number is 0330-043-2002. That's 0330-043-2002. Lee Clark, Craig Hignett, Darren Williams, the Three Legends across the North East. We'll be right back.
It's the Three Legends across the North East. Clark, legend. Williams, legend. Hignett, legend. WhatsApp us, call or send a voice message. Banter at its best. 033-00-43-2002.
Right across the North East, the Timbercat and the Red.
Fellas, can I just get your thoughts on that one? You touched on internationals and the break, and it's good for the lads who are not involved to get away and have a bit of a break. But what's happened to Riley McGree in the last 24, 48 hours? The guy basically flew out to Teesside, landed in Australia Wednesday morning at 1 a.m, sent to bed straight away. They were training that evening at 7 p.m. They had a game at 8 p.m. the following day. Now, he went out and obviously played for the Socceroos, lasted 15 minutes, got his studs caught in the turf, so it wasn't a challenge or anything, and obviously he's ended up in a moon boot and he's getting flown home to Teesside. That's the sort of toll international games can take.
I mean, why is he only flown out so short before the game?
That's when he was released to fly out. Which I know Graham Arnold's the Socceroos manager, is not happy about that.
Well, yeah, of course, it's after the game, though, Dave, wouldn't it?
It's not. I don't understand why he's gone. He flew straight after the Borough game, but he didn't arrive in Australia till when?
1 o'clock Wednesday morning, Australia time.
Is that leaving straight after the Borough match?
I'm assuming it. No, he can't have done it. Didn't have a midweek, did we?
No, there was no midweeker, so why couldn't he have went?
So why couldn't he just
Sunday? All three Borough lads went the same way.
Why couldn't he went on the Sunday? I know it's 24 hours and got there on the Monday, yeah, and he's got like 48, 60 hours. It just seems you're asking for trouble because he's had so little. Aye. You know what a flight does to you, drains you, dehydrates you. If he's been on a 24-hour one from the UK to Australia, you know, that's going to be even worse. He's gone to a completely different time zone. Had no time for the body clock to change, to get used to it. I'm not surprised he only lasted 15 minutes.
I think an indication of how bad it was is just before kickoff, the Aussie lads go into a huddle, and Riley dipped out of the huddle to go and stick water all over his face. He was throwing, you know, emptying water bottles on his head. Which is a sign to me that he's still feeling absolutely shattered.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I take it he didn't train then, 100%. Dave.
So I believe
he
did. I know
they trained before.
They sent him to bed immediately as he arrived, but then they were training 7 p.m. Wednesday evening.
Jog around the pitch, just have a little jog and open his legs and then go home or go back to the hotel? Do you know what I mean? Surely he didn't join in with full training, and then
I think he did, because Graham Arnold wanted to. You know, Arnold said in the press conference is the lads are so. I mean, he's livid. Arnold is absolutely livid about it. It wasn't just Riley. There's a couple of players that turned up the same sort of timeline. But he was saying he had to get them on the training pitch just to remind them what he wants from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, surely you can walk through stuff like that, crazy. Can't you?
Yeah, exactly.
But it is. It's, you know, when you're traveling that far, to ask you to do that in the short space of time, you are asking for trouble.
But what you usually have in that scenario, and you have it with clubs, you've got like a team manager who sorts out all the logistics for the players, how they're getting there, and what, you know, when there's a set time. But still, I've got to say, I know Arnold's angry with it, but surely his medical team should have been saying, you know, boss, this kind of work, he's not ready to play. He's not certainly not ready to start. He hasn't had enough sleep. He hasn't had he's totally dehydrated. I mean, everything that you're seeing now, when you're seeing he couldn't get into the huddle because he had to have more water. So just everything points to what happened, that he's coming off with a muscle strain, which is obviously it's going to affect Blackburn. It's going to affect Middlesbrough going forward, you know. Because he's, you know, there's a chance he could miss a few weeks if it was his calf, you said?
Don't know what the injury is yet. He's gone for scans in Sydney and is then going to be on his way back home to Teesside.
And he's missed enough football as it is this season, and Middlesbrough have missed him as well, because, you know, he's the one with a little bit of quality that can pick a pass, he can score a goal. He has got a bit of quality in that final third, and to be missing him again for I don't know how long he'll be out, you know, but just to miss him anyway after the time he spent out will be a nightmare for them. I mean, as it happens, you know, Borough, I don't think they're going to get anywhere near the playoffs, if I'm honest. You know, just looking at the table, they're on 54 points. Norwich are on 61 in the last playoff place. I can't see them making 7 points up, not the way that their form's been going. You know, so maybe it's happened at a decent time for Riley, but he doesn't want to be missing games because he's missed a lot of the season already. But Borough, if I take the Blackburn game, it sort of encapsulates the season, really. You know, they started brightly, but then it just petered out into nothing. And then, you know, the chance at the end, I mean, the amount of times they give the ball away cheaply was unbelievable. And then, you know, right at the end, they've got a chance to win it. Isaiah Jones cuts inside, left foot. I think he should score, but he's hit the crossbar, and it's come down to Silveira, who's middle of the goal, right in front of him, and misses his kick. You know, it's a poor miss. But that's the way Borough have gone this season. You know, they've played some decent stuff in spells, but when they get to that final third and when they get in front of the goal, they just don't seem to be able to be ruthless enough or consistent enough in front of goal. But the positive is it's a clean sheet. It's another point. That's really all I could take from the game against Blackburn. Because, you know what? It's the Championship's the same. Blackburn, you could write the same things down for Blackburn that you could write for a host of teams in the Championship. You know, you don't know what kind of Blackburn's going to turn up on the day. They can give anyone a game. They've got a player in Smodic who could do something on the day. Dieng made a couple of decent saves, but really it was, you know, if you look at it on the whole and judge it, it was a poor quality game between two sides who had, you know, really struggled for consistency, and that's just the story of the season, and I don't see it improving, I just see it, you know, carrying on until the end of the season, when I think Borough will probably finish 10th or 9th. And then it's next season, you know, making sure you get some decent signings to make sure that the team improves next season, because I think next season's going to be a massive season for Michael Carrick. I think people will judge Michael next year more so than this year.
I think it has to happen, Higgy. I think that they have to get in at least the playoffs next season.
I think without a shadow of a doubt, Clarkie, that's,
you know, that'll be three full seasons he's had, if he gets the full season next season. And, you know, when you're talking about building a team, you know, when you've had that's equivalent to about, six windows, transfer windows, four to six windows, you've got to be able to then say, right, you know, this is my team, this is how I want them to play, this is the identity. But not just that, the most important thing is getting points on the board with them things being ticked off as well, you know.
He's had a bit of a free pass this season because of what happened in the summer.
Losing the players that they did,
Akpom. So they lost all the their players, you know, Giles went as well, and they were really good quality. I mean, if you look at that team compared to this team, it's chalk and cheese in terms of quality and the way they play and going forward and all that stuff. So he's had a little bit of a, you know, people have understood that and they've given him a bit of a free pass this season. But I think next season they won't.
Yeah.
I think he'll be judged properly next season. They'll say, well, you've had enough time. All right, that happened to you, but it happened, you know, two seasons ago now. What have you done about it? Who are you building? And Kieran Scott will come into this because, you know, he's got an important part to play because he'll have to go and find the players to improve the squad. I think we'll see quite a bit of change in the summer. Yeah. I think there'll be, obviously, if you've got a contract, then you're happy. But people like, there's a lot of people out of contracts, you know, there's a lot of decisions to be made. You know, people like Paddy McNair, what do you do with Paddy McNair? He's obviously a good player. He's been out injured a little bit this season. But, you know, there's a lot of fans who don't have him. You know, what's his right position? Is it midfield? Is it centre-half?
And what else you've got to add up in that equation is he'll be one of the club's big top earners, yeah. I would have thought, yeah. And when you're a manager, you're assessing, you're thinking, well, can I get more for that amount of money that I'm paying Paddy or whatever? You know, sometimes you have to sacrifice something a little bit to get something else that you might feel the team needs a bit more importantly, and all that comes into play, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we don't know where they sit either, you know, with the with how much they can spend. Mm-hmm. So, like you say, Clarky, there's loads of decisions to be made. I'm sure the decisions are getting made now.
Yeah.
As it happens. Yeah. And there'll be a plan in place, and I'm sure they'll have spoken to a lot of people already because they'll want to do the business quickly. I don't think they'll want to hang about in the summer. And they certainly won't want to wait until the last week before the lads are back, or before the lads are back while they're still signing players. I think they'll all want it done before pre-season starts.
Yeah,
well, they need to, mate, because it's a fear of losing your best players, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? You could lose your best players.
Sam Greenwood, you know, at 1.5 million, is he going to be good value? But then if Leeds go up, his wages go up at Leeds. So then that might take him out of the equation. You know, maybe being a bargain at 1.5 million and I don't know how much a week, suddenly his wages have gone up because Leeds have gone in the Premier League and he's not going to come for that. Mm-hmm. Suddenly he's thinking, well, I'll sit at Leeds and get a bigger wage.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot of stuff that's going to influence what happens at Borough.
I tell you what, Higgy, they've got a crack in terms of the Easter weekend. They've definitely got, there's no dead rubbers in them two games that they've got, is there? Southampton away and then Sheffield.
Well, Southampton away is going to be a tough one because they've been really good, haven't they, this season? They're still pushing. They want to try and get up automatically. Whether they will or not, I don't know. Because the other two, you know, Leicester and Leeds. I mean, I can't believe the ground Leeds have made up to go top for
Leeds
a bit. And,
unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then Southampton went on that mad run as well, didn't they? Where they went and they got themselves right in there. And Ipswich keep plugging away. And when you think Ipswich are done, they go on a little run and win four or five on the spin, and they get themselves back in it. So it's now, if I was to pick two, I'd pick Leeds and Leicester. I think Leicester have been the best team all season, but Leeds have come on really strong, and I think they probably are the two best teams in the league. But you know, Southampton and Ipswich, they've pushed them all away. There's no doubt about it. So I think the Southampton one will be a tough one, Clarky. Asking Borough to go down there and get something. But Sheffield at home, that's got to be a must win for me. I know Sheffield will be fighting for their lives. But you would expect Middlesbrough, especially at home, you know, to turn them over, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but as you say, sometimes these are the games over the Easter period when you're not expecting some of the results, and you've just mentioned Sheffield, huge football club, fighting for their lives. They don't want to go back to where they were League One again. You know, people always say certain things about certain clubs and say they're too big for that league, but you've got to say, you know, I don't think we've got any allegiances to Sheffield, but you would say it probably is too big a club to be operating in League One. So they'll be fighting, I think. They'll be fighting. They have had a lot more positive results since the current managers being in place. So, you know, if I probably think if you were saying about the top, the bottom four teams, have just touched on Burnham earlier, these probably have, if you took over the last 10, 12 games, Sheffield have probably got the best run of form in those 10, 12 games in terms of how many points they've picked up, you know.
I think their problem has been off the pitch stuff, hasn't he? I mean, the chairman's said some mad stuff over the season.
Oh, he's crack, hasn't he?
You know, they've had a lot of probably upheaval off the pitch as much as any team. And I think that, you know, if you look at all the teams who have problems behind the scenes, they all struggle. They all struggle because whether you like it or not, it does have an effect on what happens on the pitch.
Yeah.
Because if fans turn on a chairman, not necessarily a team, but a chairman, that can then make the players feel like, oh, hang on a minute, what's going on here? This is a bit naughty, this atmosphere. And before you know it can spiral. So, you need a steady ship. And if you haven't got that, then I always think you're going to struggle anyway. You know, you might have good players, but if things aren't run right and you haven't got the right people, then, and you've got a nugget, for a want of a better word, in the background who is trying to stir things when he doesn't need to. It's always going to be an issue, isn't it?
Definitely.
Totally.
Absolutely.
But Clarkie, talking about two nil-nilers, boring games, if you like, yours was far from boring, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were never really out at Higgy, to be honest. I think as Newcastle fans, were quite happy that it was only 2-0. It could have been a lot more. Eddie went with a little bit of a different system with three centre-backs, and it just didn't allow us to be able to get at Man City like we had in the previous games. Mm. I think he tried something different, because obviously, as I said, in previous games we had been competitive in the games but still lost them. So I think Eddie was thinking, well, you know, the game has to be won on the day, so you've got to go for it. And he wanted to try something different, and it didn't really work. You know, Jacob Murphy is one of the wing backs, and you know, so a tough one. Could have been a lot worse. Disappointing to go out of a cup competition, but I've got no criticism. I mean, listen, I've heard people say could have done a bit more in the game, which just stood off them, but that's easier said than done, you know, when you go to the Etihad. Being exactly in the game, we know that it's easy up in the terraces, or when you're watching on the television to say, oh, we should have had more of a go at them. But you're talking about 11 world-class players, man. It's, you know, you think you're getting close to them, they just pop it off. And, you know, we've all been there when we've played against the top sides in Warira. I mean, I remember playing against the brilliant Arsenal side once. I thought they had 15 players on the pitch at one stage. They were just popping the ball around you, and you were thinking you were getting close to them. And where's he come from? You know, you've got Bergkamp, Pires, Ashley Cole, Henri Vieira, and you're thinking, how many players have you got on the pitch? You stand there when there's a breaking play, counting them. One, two, three. But nah, listen, it just means that I hope it doesn't peter out. I hope we can still fight to try and get one of these European places. I mean, we're next Saturday morning, a huge match for us, West Ham, one of the teams that we could potentially catch to get a Conference League place or whatever. So I think that's a really must-win game. It's a proverbial six-pointer. But a lot of the stuff concerning Newcastle at the minute just is stuff and about the players and stuff, but it's not concerning what's happening on the pitch. There's been a few stories linking Bruno with the move away, that Newcastle will be looking to offload him for 100 million plus so that then they can reinvest in the squad. Sean Longstaff's been linked very, very strongly with Leeds if they go up. Obviously, you've got Anthony Gordon potentially representing England tomorrow night against Brazil.
I was pleased
for
him, Clarkie, because we'd mentioned it, hadn't we, that he deserved the call up. And thankfully, he got one.
And surely Higgy, Gareth, when he's calling these lads up now, he's going to give them a chance to say, listen, come on, it's down to you now if you want to get in these 23 players for the Euros. I mean, I've got to say, when we were talking about this, I didn't realise it'd been reduced, the numbers, in terms of it's only 23-man squad that the managers can pick now. So it's a really tough call when it's reduced to that number, because it's been 26 and 24 in the past, now it's 23, because there's been some talk today about him just taking two strikers with potentially Ivan Toney and Ollie Watkins getting the chances in the next two games with Brazil and Belgium, and him taking one of them to alongside Harry Kane, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a tough one.
Well, it goes to what we were saying about utility players or players who can play different positions. Yeah. You know, absolutely. We spoke about Joe Gomez, didn't we? About the positions he can play. Trent, he's another one who can play different positions. It's it becomes, when you've got to narrow your squad down or slim your squad down, it becomes important, doesn't it? That suddenly these players can play different places. I mean, I don't know if you watched the United Liverpool game. I think you did, Clarkie, but
I was there, mate. Yeah.
Oh, Kobbie Mainoo, how good was he?
Outstanding, outstanding,
unbelievable.
And
18
and
years of age.
I read some of the stuff after the game. I read Rio Ferdinand, and he wasn't comparing him, but he said he's got the use of his body, and some of the things he'd done in tight areas remind you of Clarence Seedorf.
Yeah.
And you think, you don't want to put
shifting
too much pressure, because
there's
Seedorf, who's world class, by the way. But you can see that when you mention the name Seedorf, and you think, and then you look at some of the things he'd done last week against Liverpool, you think, you know what, there's something there. Yeah, physicality wise, for an 18-year-old, he's got it. He's there. Yeah. He's holding people off. Yeah. He's pushing.
But he
them
doesn't
out
look a big lad, does he?
No, he's strong physically. He's not the tallest, but the way he holds the ball, his composure, he plays in tight areas. He's quick. He covers the ground. He's aggressive. Mm. No, mate, I wasn't surprised that he got the late call up. And like I said, exactly the same with Anthony Gordon. It's pointless Gareth bringing him into the squad if he's not going to have a look at him, because he might as well have just left him in the under-21s and played some games there and could have watched his development. So now he's brought him into the group. Yes, he'll get the experience, but surely he's going to get some minutes to see if he can be one of these that always crop up, these late arrivals into the squad.
If he plays anywhere near that, he's going to go. He'll go.
Absolutely.
I don't see how you can leave him out.
Can't disagree with that. He was outstanding.
The biggest surprise for me was he brought him off.
Mm. Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. Yeah. I mean, Liverpool, I thought Liverpool in that game, the game was unbelievable, the game, but I thought Liverpool bossed the game and really should have been three or four up.
Should have wrapped it up before extra time, mate. It shouldn't have gone extra time. They had four or five situations where they had 3-on-2. They even had a 5-on-2 at one.
They had a 5-on-2 at one stage. Yeah. He didn't get an effort on goal.
And it seemed to me like the thought, well, we're that much on top, we're going to get another chance. So they weren't being clinical. And then obviously, when you've still got the quality that they have, you know, I don't think Man U, in terms of over the last 18 months, have been a great team. But let's get it straight. They've still got some outstanding individual footballers. Yeah. You know, gone natural.
I mean, the chance Rashford missed the last kick of the game.
Exactly.
In normal time.
Exactly. So, it's... No, I think Liverpool blew that chances in normal time. But as you say, it was a superb game. Superb game against two big clubs. But as you say, the Emmanuel was absolutely superb. And I'm hoping he'll get a chance in at least one of these friendlies and be looking forward to seeing him. Like I will Anthony Gordon, like I will with Ollie Watkins, Ivan Toney. These lads deserve an opportunity to stake their claim. And let's see what can happen. I mean, just the last thing on the England stuff. What's your thoughts on the controversial decision by Nike, the kit makers, at the St George's flag? What's your thoughts?
Well, it's not the St George's flag, is it?
Well, it isn't.
I don't know what it is.
Right colours.
It's ridiculous. No. It's our flag.
It's a hip and
just
trendy
leave
version.
The flag alone. Yeah. What a trendy version of what though, Dave? You can't suddenly change the colour of a flag, can you?
Yeah.
And say, oh, this is trendier. Imagine Brazil changing theirs and saying, oh, let's do a different one. It's we're not going to go yellow no more and whatever it is, green, is it, or the blue. Let's change it to something different. Or change the Jamaica flag to, like, I don't know, whatever. A little grey. Put a bit of grey in it and a bit of mauve and it'll be mint. Well, you can't just change flags, can you?
No.
I know they were on about the 2012 Olympics where the Union Jack was blue, wasn't it? It was all blue. There was nothing in it. But that was for the that's warm-up kit or whatever. And no one kicked up a fuss about it. But I think when it's football and it's your flag,
And around everything that's going on now about wokeness.
And it's on your national team jersey.
Yeah. And I just think it was ridiculous from Nike to do it. Whether they'll backtrack or not, I don't think.
But someone in the FAs must have passed it, though, Higgy, as well.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't know what they're thinking of.
They must have,
It's gone mad.
But the world has gone... Tell you what, boys, it'll have got a lot of common inches.
It wasn't the same guy who sanctioned the bar at Sunderland, was it?
One thing's for certain, it'll have got a lot written about it, so why don't we get the view of the journalist? Ian Murta joins us. He's on after the Three Legends, Black, White and Red All Over, coming up at 7 o'clock. Ian, written anything? Got any views on changing national team flags on back of shirts?
Well, I've got a suggestion for the lads. Why don't you all grow your hair the length of mine, and then you wouldn't see the flag because the hair would be over your collar.
Harvey Elliott turn the collar up, didn't he? Yesterday,
Harvey Elliott yesterday was it? Or today? This morning he turned his collar up so you couldn't see the flag.
He doesn't play with his collar up, does he?
I'm not an England fan, so I'm not too excited or outraged about it. I'm an Ireland fan. I was brought up an Ireland fan, so you know, it's we're not talking about the badge.
Hold on, Ian. Where's the Irish connection? Family,
born there. Yeah, all that. Yeah.
You were born there. You were born there.
Yeah.
Irish. By the way, you're not queuing up at Malaga, Dubai with that Irish passport, are you? You're straight through.
I'll go straight to a wave at it's fantastic when you get to airports. Can you just wave it over your go to the front of the queue? Yeah. Anyway, enough of that.
What about if you change the Irish flag to red,
blue, red, whatever it is,
blue? Yeah.
Listen, if and when Ireland gets unified, there possibly will be a new flag, but that's I think that's for some other show.
We don't do politics on this show.
We don't do politics.
No.
Listen, before we...
We definitely don't do politics. We tell the truth.
No. Listen, I'll tell you who my guests are tonight. Now, my first guest is somebody who will have reported on all of you, and Damien Spellman of the Press Association.
Yeah.
Now, I've decided to book him in because... Oh, he's a great lad. And because not only does he cover North East sport, but he's been covering international football in the Republic of Ireland for many, many years. Now, my second guest is a name you probably haven't heard for a few years. But now, you're legends, but with respect, I think this guy's a bit of a legend as well. A broadcasting legend, Mick Lowes.
Mick.
Well, I hope it gets the same reaction from my listeners because Mick was a legend. I think, you know, you're thinking probably of the late, great Ali Brownie was probably the only one who had the same kind of following as Mick did during his career in the North East. So I'm looking forward to speaking to Mick later on.
Yeah. Cracking. Pass on my regards to Mick. I haven't seen him for ages.
Certainly will.
Him and
certainly
Ando were top men.
Yeah. Black, white, red all over. Ian Murta joining the boys immediately after this show. So, 9.5 minutes to fill, fellas? What are you going to do that with? There's your challenge.
Oh. What can we talk about
now? It's music then.
Yeah. Clarky said he was going to sing.
Oh, no. We want to get more listeners, Higgy, not lose them.
Karaoke, Clarky. Love it.
Oh, can you imagine? There's an idea.
I'll tell you what. Anyone watch Wales last night?
Oh, what a result.
Yeah, I watched them. They were excellent. They were very good. The player,
Nico Williams, got a goal.
Oh, what a goal he scored. Free kick. Superb. But they were really at it. Obviously, I took a close interest from my big pal Chris, was manager Chris Coleman, and they were back to that high intensity level and right in Finland's face and scored 3 minutes in off young Brooks, David Brooks, and just were brilliant from start to finish.
Clarkie, do you think international football depends on who you're playing nowadays? You know, so obviously, I think Finland are better than they were, aren't they?
Yes.
But that you would expect them to, I would expect Wales to beat Finland. And beat them comfortably. And I go about, you know, the opposition. That's why I'm interested to see England against Brazil. What kind of Brazil team plays? Because if you're playing against a really good international team, it's really difficult to impose yourself
for if you're a smaller nation, if you like. And I think that's why Wales, you know, whenever they do well, it sort of raises my eyebrows, because, you know, against a good international side, and they've had some brilliant results against top international sides. But I always think when you play the Finlands, or I don't know who else.
Well, they've got another big test, haven't they? They've got the final Tuesday to do or die last game against Poland at Cardiff.
Well, that'll be a good game, because I think they're really well matched.
They're good. But to be honest with you, you know, it's a massive bonus that Wales are at home playing at the Cardiff City Stadium, because they do get massive help from the fans there. They call it the Red Wall. And that makes a hell of a difference to them. So yeah, hopefully they can do the business on Tuesday and get one of those last positions in the Euros, because I'd like to see them there. Love to see all the home nations. Obviously, you've got Scotland and who are opening the tournament in England there. I think Northern Ireland going through a little bit of a transitional period with Michael O'Neill, with the really young squad that they have. Republic are looking to make an announcement on the manager. I mean, there's the situation now, isn't it, to put John O'Shea in as interim while they're finishing off the final touches on a manager. But what happens if John O'Shea wins these next two friendlies he's got? What happens then? Exactly. Not just exactly what was said about Rowett and that, doesn't it? Because you know what the fans will think, oh, John O'Shea, brilliant player for his country, over 100 caps, top player, you know, from the country. He does well in the two games. You know, there'll be a clamour for him. So do they then change their mind? Because they're saying they're quite far down the road with one of their targets now. Look to appoint him after these fixtures, but he could put a spanner in the works.
At international level, do you think it's important that you've managed before?
Do you know what?
Because I'm thinking there's not many people who go into that job without having done something before.
And I've always said this as well. I've always said, international football is so different, and so many experienced managers have said to me they would never sign a player off the back of playing really well in a tournament for his country, because it's so different to the league football, and especially league football in the Premier League, in the Championship or whatever, and they very rarely want to just sign the player off the back of that. But I totally agree. I think international football is for an experienced man, someone who's, you know, certainly done it at club level. I don't think it necessarily have to be someone who's experienced being an international manager for some of the jobs that you can have. I think because when you're managing a club, certainly in a high profile league, you're seeing a lot of those countries' players in anyway, aren't you, on week in, week out basis. So,
well, if Gareth decides to step away, or when Gareth decides to step away, I mean, there was talk of Manchester United for Gareth, wasn't there, last week? That was mentioned, and I think that's obviously...
When you look
with
at
your
the,
mate
you
going from Newcastle to Man U.
Exactly. So Dan Ashworth worked very closely with Gareth on the English DNA and all that. Gareth's very strongly linked and very good friends with Dave Brailsford from Ineos. So obviously they've got Jim Radcliffe's here. You know, what anyone can see, Gareth's done a tremendous job with England. He's developed some top young players. And I can see Gareth Southgate being Man United manager, actually, because I think he's got the calmness. I think he's got, he's eloquent in how he speaks. He can handle the media. He's had to deal with pressured situations with England. I know at club level, it didn't go particularly well with Borough for him.
Do you think that'll always be levelled at him though, Clarkie? Yeah, unless he wins something with England.
Yeah.
Do you think no matter what job he gets, because he'll get a big job, that the fans will be like, well, he's never done anything, he hasn't won anything?
Oh, of course.
Do you think that'll always get levelled at him?
Yeah, of course. You know how ruthless it is when you've got this group of elite managers who've won trophy after trophy after trophy, and then they'll think, well, but I never ever thought it. He was never in my mind when it was talk of Man United potentially wanting a new manager. But since it's been mentioned, I'm thinking about it, and I'm weighing up all the scenarios. I'm thinking that could happen, you know. That could definitely could happen. definitely.
Well, it is when you look at the connection. You know, what's the latest with Dan Ashworth? Because there was talk last week of Newcastle trying to sort out a deal to get him gone quicker, wasn't there?
Yeah, and there's been talk as well, which I cannot see getting past, that they could provide a dossier to the Premier League on players that have been talked about when Dan was there, potential players they're going to recruit. And Man United aren't allowed to go for those players.
Yeah, but that can't happen, can it?
Well, exactly.
Because what, who's to say that, man, you aren't looking at the same players anyway?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's never going to happen. The only way they can stop that and protect that happening is, well, they can't, but to say to him, you're not starting until pre-season next year.
But we know Higgy.
Unbelievable.
You know, he'll be passing messages on.
Yeah, so of course he will.
One way or the other to Man United about, they'd be picking his brains already, you know what I mean? Not in official capacity, but we know how.
Do you think Newcastle and Man U are in for the same players, Clarkey?
I think in the summer there potentially could be, mate, in terms of it'll be a different ball game in terms of the financial fair play.
Do you think one of them gets in Champions League and one doesn't, do you think that'll have an effect on that?
I think Newcastle
are going to get in the Champions League, are they?
I think you make it very difficult for yourself to attract the real elite players if you're not Champions League club. Definitely.
So then that argument would fall down, wouldn't it? If Man U sign a player and Newcastle say, well, hang on a minute, we were going to sign him, and then the player comes out and says, well, I wasn't going to sign for you because you're not in the Champions League.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they've got no argument, have they?
There's lots of equations in terms of how it can be done, definitely.
Mm. What's your prediction for the score for England, Brazil?
2-0 England.
Ooh,
go on.
Brazilians through in transition period.
I'm going to go 2-1 England. Are you going 2-1, Daz?
Definitely. Yeah. Same as you, mate, yeah.
Yeah, I can't see Brazil not scoring, but I think England will do 2-1.
So that's England getting beat then if all three of you are gone for England.
Well, there's every chance, isn't there now?
that's standard, that Dave.
Fellas, we're done.
The mockers right on Gareth.
We're done
for
another
week. Sooner he gets to Man U, the better.
I'll phone him up now and tell him you've tipped him. Fellas, brilliant. We'll catch you next week. Good Friday, but there's lots of football to look at on that day itself. So we'll catch you
then.
Can't
wait. Have a great weekend.
Cheers. See you later.
Bring it, lads.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Have a good one, lads. Take care.
See you. Bye-bye. Right across the northeast, the red, the tune, and the cat.